Back at the back, there were several sheets being passed out. One of them was a single white sheet that had a lot of numbers on it. One of them, I think, at the top said that it was Chancellor Gillespie's proposal. I think there was another one that Renee had out that's going to be on the screen behind me. And there was another one, I think, that Marta had passed out that provides a quick but very thorough look at what the CalPERS plans are and how they're different than what we have. There are also 10 copies each of spreadsheets that Marta Frexis down here in the front row spent her life kind of comparing what we have in terms of the AFT contract and the ASCC contract, which is everybody else that's classified and managers and supervisors. And those people who would be on the basic plan, which is the one that active employees will have, and those people who would be on the Medicare and supplement plan. Only brought 10 copies because we didn't know how many people were going to want them. We can make more of them. They cost us $9 to copy, and they'll cost $10.50 to mail. So there's also a sign-up sheet, I think, in the back that if you decide after Marta's finished with her presentation, you'd like a copy of those, then we'll figure out a way to get them copied and mailed to you. So it's information that's basically been compiled to share as best we can. We're here because of $12.4 million. That's the story, essentially. The district has said that they are now paying $36 million a year for the collective benefits for active and retired people. It's a lot of money. It's 20.5% of the district budget. They're wishing to try to reduce that because they're feeling that it's continuing to expand and that at some point they can't afford it, and they've sort of drawn a line in the sand now and said that time's arrived. CalPERS is an option, the only option they have available, but it's an option that they can go to, and CalPERS will provide the coverage that they offer, which is a substitute for what we have for $24 million. So basically they're going to save about $12.4 million. It's a third of what they're now paying. They're saying that you're going to get the same coverage and you're going to be happy and that they're taking care of you, but that doesn't work at home in my budget. And CalPERS obviously has some advantage because it's a huge operation and it's got some power and it's got maybe more leverage in terms of buying power than the district. But I'm not sure it's that much. CalPERS says that they're able to keep rate increases year over year down because of their numbers, and that the district finds that attractive so that once they get in there, the hope is that the premium year over year won't continue to increase as much. Our investigation shows that, in my opinion, is a lie, or at least it's a deception, because what CalPERS is able to do is shift internally in the plan a number of things that we now have paid for us by our plan and shift to us to pay for. And that's kind of a thing behind the scenes. You don't have to advertise that. You can just advertise the premium went up by 5 or 6%, but you don't show exactly how they got there. This last year, their premium for the basic plan, the one actives would have, was gonna go up by over 20%. The way they kept it at 6% was essentially to take $44 million out of their reserve and apply it to the new premium. That's a significant amount of money, and it got it down to 6%. So they advertised to the district year over year for the last 8 or 9 years that we only go up about 5 or 6%, but they don't fess up in terms of how they kept it there. And one of the things that's attractive to the district beyond the savings is this relative stability in terms of increase of premium. So essentially, we asked the district for information about all of this going back to last spring when it first became clear that they were attracted to CalPERS, and they didn't respond to us. And we asked again at the end of May and they didn't respond, and we asked in July when the Chancellor said this is what we're going to do, and they didn't respond. And finally, he brought three very large, very full boxes to us on the 25th of September that explained what each of the plans was like and all of the accoutrements of what CalPERS was all like and how all of this stuff went together. Each of the plans you can actually cover in about an inch and a quarter by 3.5 inches. And that's all the district ever looked at when they decided this is a great plan. It says what your deductible is and what your copay is and what your out-of-pocket maximum is going to be and what you pay for prescriptions. And it doesn't take a long time to do that. Unfortunately, behind that very small piece of paper is about 150 to 180 pages that actually explains. And then when you get there through there, you still have a hard time understanding what it said. And there are other things that go behind that under all kinds of other contingencies. So several of us have now wrapped our heads around all of that information. Doesn't mean we've digested it, but we know enough about it to be able to say we don't want it and why, and to be able to kind of argue a case as we go along. CalPERS is huge. Many of us know CalPERS because that's where you get your pension. They have another part which provides benefits. They have another part which provides long-term care. Many of us bought long-term care, assuming we had paid for it and we knew what it cost. And then soon afterward, it went up by 85% because they didn't know what they were doing. Okay, there was a self-funded plan. So we contributed the money that they had, and they didn't ask enough from us, and they provided too much to us. And the result is, for many of us, we got stuck, because after you're in there for a number of years, you're old enough, you don't have options. Most of the private companies got out of the business because it was too expensive, and those of us that stayed in haven't been too happy with the whole thing, so therefore we don't feel real good about CalPERS. I think that their benefit plan is the same. It's self-funded, and there's some problems with self-funding. I think they have enough in their reserve because they can go to the companies that contract with them, like our district, and keep asking for more money to make sure that there's enough there, and the district's obliged by contract to provide benefits, and CalPERS is the cheapest place you can go to get them, so you're going to continue to give them the money necessary to cover, you know, their plan. So I don't think they're unsafe financially in that situation. But they're huge. There's more than 1,000 entities like our district, if it goes there, who they provide benefit coverage for. They provide benefit coverage for 1.5 million people. That's 1,000 times the number of companies we're associated with our district. And it's 1,000 times the number of people, and the plan that we represent is 1,500 going in there. That means we have zero voice in the whole operation. It means that the district has zero voice in the whole operation. They're going to send the check, and CalPERS is going to be in charge. And we know that to a large degree because there's 16 other community college districts who currently contract with CalPERS. And there are three that have left. And I talked to Mike Gregoric. You probably remember that name as being a vice chancellor. He moved down to Mount SAC in a similar position. He's retiring in March. He called me 2 days ago and said, hey, when I left here, interesting enough, the district gave me benefits for life, like those the rest of you who were hired before 1990, only he wasn't hired before 1990. It's a good deal. Some people have got better leverage than other people. I'm not saying he shouldn't have that. Mount SAC is also going to give him one, and that's cool, because right now I'm in that same situation. I have bought my own Medicare. My wife worked for the district. I work for the district. I have three coverages. It's a really fat, comfortable place to be. That goes away with CalPERS, but at least I know that the privilege of having that kind of coverage is pretty sweet. So anyway, what Mike told me is that Mount SAC left CalPERS on the 31st of December because they didn't want to be there anymore. They didn't have a voice. The price kept going up. The price kept getting passed on to their active employees and retirees, and they were complaining about it, and they needed to get out. And what happens is that if you're in CalPERS, like I said, neither the district nor us as members will have a voice. We'll get what CalPERS provides. But the thing about union negotiations, and we've had unions since the late 1970s, is unions get to collectively bargain. They bargain for hours and wages and conditions, and what occurs in wages is your compensation. And your compensation comes particularly in a salary and your benefits. So consequently, every 3 years when you bargain, you have those two, like a teeter-totter, to balance back and forth. Over the last 48 years, what's happened is that the bargaining sometimes gets the benefit package a little sweeter and trades a little of the salary increase off, because it's grown over time. It's added maternity elements to it. It added an EAC. Before anybody else in the culture was doing it, it added domestic partners. It added a dental plan. It added a vision plan. None of those were there in 72. So consequently, negotiations have expanded it to be a very nice package of coverage, and that was paid for along the way by salary that wasn't taken. That wasn't that we were treated badly, but what now happens, if you go to CalPERS, and CalPERS provides the benefit plan, and it provides a plan with three levels of coverage for active employees, and a plan for retirees with three levels of coverage for Medicare and a Medicare supplement, that doesn't get bargained anymore. All you do is have CalPERS send you the bill, and that is part of your compensation, and what you have left is to bargain for salary with what's left over. So consequently, it's really important to be able to bargain the two of those, because as your population changes, if you're all 20 to 30, you want good pregnancy care. If you're not, then you want other kinds of care. So this is a flexible thing. It's not locked in. It's alive, and it needs to be negotiated. It's almost like you destroyed the two unions and their capacity to represent active employees, and they represent us. We don't get to represent. We can FaceTime with the district. We can try to convince them, but we don't have a vote. Our position is essentially to try to keep the two unions as well informed as we can, and we've met with them and tried to share them with them all of the information we have, but they make the final decision. And right now we're in kind of a process of negotiation. We're trying to have an influence on all sides of that negotiation, but nonetheless we're pretty much dependent on what they do. So we need two viable unions who can really negotiate the full landscape of what unions do for us. And if they go to CalPERS, the teeth of the union have been pulled, and we will take whatever CalPERS has to offer, and we won't have an ability to kind of play that back and forth. So, where are the unions at this point? SEIU is still negotiating. They're still, basically from everything we can glean, they do not want to go to CalPERS, but the district put out nice incentives. It essentially says we'll give you a 3% off schedule raise the first year, 6% on your retirement the second year, 3% more the third year, if you go to CalPERS. If not, there's no raise, because your raise is coming out of the $12.4 million that CalPERS saves the district. $12.4 million is not new money. It's not like they found it on the street, went out and started scooping it up. It's already in the budget. All they're doing is moving it from benefits to salary, to new employees, to things that help education for students. Nobody's going to argue against those. But somebody's paying for that. All they're doing is shifting money from one pocket to another. So consequently, there's an incentive for SEIU to say yes. There's an incentive for retirees. If you're now paying for Medicare on your own, you don't get to pay it anymore. District's going to pay for it. That's $1,725 a year, not out of your pocket. we don't think it's worth it. We'll try to convince you that it's not worth it. But essentially, there's incentives and disincentives along the line. So SEIU is still in the process of negotiation. They say they don't want to go there, but we're all divided because there are people who are in retirement who are there, people who are not in retirement there. SEIU is less divided because they're essentially all in the same boat. But they're very angry going back to 2005 that they're in a separate plan from the retirees, not the retirees, but from the faculty, and they don't have as good coverage. And many of them are paying $1,000 a year, part of the premium. That goes away too, because the district says it won't have to have that. So there's good reasons financially for you to look seriously at that and say maybe that's not such a bad deal, particularly for the active employees and something for the retirees. Okay, for the faculty, they're dug in. They're saying no, absolutely. And we hope that they stay there, but the faculty have allowed in all of the part-time teachers as full-time members of the faculty union. They significantly outnumber the active employees. And they have provided the leadership for the union in the last 5 years, including last year the president of the union. They have a completely different agenda. They have no benefits. All they want is salary, and they deserve it. Or office hours paid for, or what have you. You look at the full-time active faculty. They haven't had a raise in 3 years. They're hiring new, young faculty. They want a raise. The district says there's no money for it. So consequently, yeah.
I just wondered, the parking permits are here.
Okay.
If they raise their hands, we'll pass
okay.
them out.
Okay, Pat's got the parking permits, and she'll, if you raise your hand and need one, she'll pass them out. Okay, you also have Tier 1, those of us who were hired before 1990.
I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah.
They'll need to put their name and their car information on the bottom left of the form and put it on the dashboard.
Okay.
They need to put them on there.
Yeah, name, car information, and on your dashboard, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they should go to
the cars. Right, for the current faculty, they're in a situation where everybody hired after 2001 doesn't get benefits in retirement. They would like a raise now. They're not looking to the future in terms of protecting us because they have no stake in us. So you have a number of different populations within the faculty that they're having to weigh amongst themselves to decide what their position is. The faculty's dug in and said no to CalPERS, and since CalPERS is the only thing the district is interested in, the district called a halt to negotiations at the end of November and said, okay, we're at impasse because they're not moving and we're not making any progress. And so there's a process to negotiations. After you declare impasse, then you go to mediation. You bring in somebody from the outside as a neutral person. They talk to both sides and try to say, can we find middle ground? Is there some place here where we can reach an agreement? That was scheduled for the 19th of December. It was canceled because the head of the union negotiator had the flu and couldn't participate. They put it off until the 30th of January. They just met with that last week. They're still talking. They don't know where they're going. The mediator didn't bring it to a close. They're meeting again the 11th of February. Hopefully they continue to meet for a while. If that doesn't work, then they go to a next step, which is fact-finding, where both sides kind of lay out their case to the other, and a fact-finder tries to draw a line and say, you know, this you got this strength, and try again another level to bring them together. And if that doesn't occur, then the district has the right to impose its will and say, yeah, we're going to CalPERS, that's the way it is. And the faculty then has the right to strike. It's kind of like us. We now have the right to negotiate in our way by keeping everybody informed and trying to be persuasive. That doesn't work, then our next step is a strike. Not a strike, but essentially a lawsuit. It's problematic for everybody. It doesn't mean everybody's going to strike. It doesn't mean you can keep people out there for a long time. I think the district board doesn't want any of that stuff to occur. Depends on how dug in there are. Right now, it looks to us like there's a 3-2 vote. That's a huge, huge decision for three people to take on their own shoulders. We can't guarantee the other two won't go along, but at this point, they haven't. They're the newest two trustees, and we're hoping for them not to. We're also hoping that the district keeps saying, we really don't want a, we don't want a public food fight here. We don't want this in the newspapers. We don't want to draw negative attention to us. We have a good reputation now. We don't want a strike, and we don't want a lawsuit. And all of that gets messy, and as soon as you get in, it's out of everybody's control. And it's looking back maybe a generation before you recover from it. Long time. People cross the picket line, and other people don't, and they don't talk to each other again. The district doesn't want all of us alienated for the rest of our life, hopefully. But these are, this is just kind of a look at, you know, sort of the circumstances of where we are. I don't know whether it's an adequate kind of a survey, but we've done a lot of work from every imaginable angle we can look at it to try to figure out what the situation is. So a couple of things I'd like to share with you kind of real quickly. This sheet that has all the numbers on it, what it basically says is we're old. And we're trading on that with the district. We're trading on it because CalPERS is a very large operation. It's going to be difficult to communicate with them located in Sacramento or someplace else behind the phone bank. They've heavily gone toward putting all of their information on the internet, so you call in and they say, we'll go to this site and figure it out. It's a very much more complex process in terms of the way they provide benefits and all kinds of little discretionary options that they give themselves that represent barriers potentially to you immediately getting the service, where you've got to get a pre-authorization, or they can say it's medically necessary or not, or a lot of things that we really haven't had to live with in our plan. So we're very worried as we have an aged population about how successfully many of our retirees are going to be able to navigate the labyrinth of communication that they're going to have to go through to get what they're having paid for. We asked you a couple months ago to give us back, if you would, some information about, can you find on the CalPERS system whether or not their formulary for prescriptions contains all of your prescriptions? A fourth of you couldn't do it. And a larger number were wrong when you came back and said, I can't find it there, because we knew it was there because of what you turned in. So we got information we were looking for, but we incidentally found out how difficult this is going to be for a lot of people. I don't use the internet at all. My wife will. I don't even use I use a flip phone. I don't even use an iPhone. I'm an absolute Luddite, and I never carry the phone with me. So the result is, I don't think I'm alone. And what this says here is our oldest retiree is 102. We have 61 retirees between 90 and 102. We have 113 between 85 and 89. We have 97 between 80 and 85. We have 230 between 70 and 75. That's a lot of people who came in at my age or a little older well after we went to technology. What they have ahead of us is going to require some level of sophistication. We've been trying to tell the district, look at your parents. Look at what you take care of them. Look at whether they're in an assisted facility. Look at their mental acuity. Look at them, and that's who we are. And we're hoping, I mean, it's a sympathy vote we're after. We don't have a lot of leverage, so you're appealing to the kind of a sense of humanity. Okay, the other thing that, this is the downside of this sheet right here. I asked Renee last week or 2 weeks ago, Can you get on the internet a life expectancy for people who are 95, who are 90, who are 85, who are 80, who are 75, who are 70? Okay, above 80, there's 271 people there. To the edge of that on the right is the life expectancy if you're 90, the life expectancy if you're 85, the life expectancy if you're... I was happy to find out I have 9 more years. Okay, what's going on here is that the district is saying we have this critical need because there's so many of you eating at our trough for benefits. And we need to solve that right now because we're going to be in trouble in the future. Those 270 people, according to this sheet, are gone in 2030. I don't hope to be gone. Some of us are going to live longer, some less. But that's reality. And looking around, all of us know that more than we did at 60 or 50 or 40 or 30. We're living with it in terms of the number. Our last three monitors, last spring, last summer, in the fall, and the one that just came out, winter, 28 deceased names are on those three monitors. And most of us know who they are. In 2010, when we completed the settlement agreement, 455 people were included in that settlement agreement. 121 are gone. 334 are left. It's a reality. So consequently, we're trying to tell them this population can't go where you want them to go effectively. We don't know that for sure, but a lot of people can't. It's a large population. It's a short-term problem. It's not going to be with you forever because you already mitigated it. It just takes a while for it to act. In 1990, you reduced the cost of your benefits by putting everybody between 1990 and 2000 on Medicare. The reason you went there was to save money. We are the ones that are the old ones in Tier 1. After that, you did it twice again, giving people nothing once they retired. So when this bubble goes through, and there's a real bubble. I mean, when I came to Ventura College, there were 78 full-time people. 1965, they hired 39 people with me. The next year, they hired 38. We brought in the bubble boom. I mean, the baby boom. We were the first youth people to provide education at the college level. 67, 68, they brought in Moore Park, a whole new bubble of people. We didn't hire again for a generation, except when Oxnard came in the late 70s. We're all retired now. We're all part of this. So consequently, there's a large group of people now going through, and most of them are going to be through in the next decade. And the district's in a position then to begin saving the money that are already bargained for in 1990 and in 2000. They just need to be patient enough to go there. So, at the moment, not only as the district says it costs $36 million and we want to save a quarter, a third of that, but they're also saying we have $78.8 million in reserve. Hell of a lot of money, but it's untouchable because they said so. They said that there's $17 million that they could possibly apply to benefits if they chose to. They have an additional $22 million that they began setting aside in 2010 for retirees. They say that eventually we need about $170 million in that fund to take care of retiree benefits. By that time, we're all dead. I mean, they're going to have a huge amount of money unless they start spending it and they haven't spent any of it. So they're telling us that they're hurting, that it's imperative. That was the Chancellor's language, that we began doing exactly what we're doing because we're in financial trouble. And the board's been convinced of that. And we don't know that we could pry any of that $78 million free, but that's an obscene amount of money to say at the end of the year for a college institution that doesn't do anything but provide education has left over. And they're saying that they can't do the thing, they can't hire new people, they can't do this, they can't do that, but they've got that kind of money. They're saying next year they'll still have $61 million left. So consequently, it's not going away at one time. So what happens is when the district spends the $12.4 million on the things it wants to spend it on, it's gone. It's gone next year. It's a one-time savings. Then they're exactly in the same place now, only the money's gone, and it'll go every year to the same things that they're buying it for. Then they're going to have to face the same premium again next year. So it's a one-time savings. It's not a long-term benefit. So we're also kind of laying that out and saying, you know, that's your reality. But right now it's a cure-all. It's a panacea. There's this bright, shiny gold thing out there that they say they want raises. They say they want to hire new staff. They say they need to have extra money to pay for the benefits, the pensions of those people, and they have some educational things to do. But, and we could, like I said, we can't argue against those, but we have a case essentially against that. So the second thing that, let's go on down a little bit. Our population collectively, 589 of us, we have given to the district 14,000 years of our life. 14,000 years of our life. Both CalPERS and STERS says that the average retiree has put in 23 years. I put in 38, many of you put in more than that. Using the 23-year figure times 589 is 14,000 years. We gave to every part of this campus, at every level, every part of the operation exists because of our generation's contribution. And they're saying, okay, you guys are, I mean, we're a liability. We're a liability to the unions. We're a liability to the district. We just don't see ourselves as a liability. If you look at the bottom, many of us obviously have Part A and Part B. We got it because we chose to have it. We did not, for the most part, get it because we got it while we were employed at the college district. We got it before we came to the college district. We got it along with the college district and some other job. But the district, for Tier 1 people, we didn't have money taken out of our salary for Social Security or Medicare. So consequently, when we look at that, the fact that there are that many of us, and that's a huge asset to the district, because Medicare pays the first 80%. Anthem only pays the last 20%. So Anthem gets $100, for instance, from the district to pay for the bill. For those of us who have Medicare pays the first $80, and Anthem pays the last 20, and it pockets the other 80 for those people. It needs about a 20% profit margin. All of the people on Medicare, the average for all current employees on the district plan in terms of how much they take out of the $100 is $110. That's why Anthem keeps coming back and saying next year it costs you more. For retirees on Medicare, it costs them $44 out of $100. We're not a liability. What they want to do is put us all in a place where that's where we reside. So, Renee, I'll let you come up and kind of make a presentation on how the plan breaks down. Then I'd like to come back and make a few comments, and then we'll pass it on to Marta to kind of look in some detail at the options that you're going to have, whether you're in Tier 1 or Tier 2, and the level that they're giving us. Okay, Renee.